except for the cold night air, the pain in her ankle, and the fullness in her breast. She was without feeling or memories. Then her heart seemed to stop. Her breasts were full, ready to be suckled. Her baby. Where was her baby? Memories of the day past swept her away, throwing her down into a dark hole of despair. She had lived through the flash flood, but she had lost her baby. Redshaw curled up in the cold, wet mud and wept. The pain in her ankle was nothing compared to the searing grief in her heart. She tore at her hair and clothes as her pain cried out from the pit of her being. Then she pounded the mud until her fists were numb. Slowly, then, a clear memory of the flood began to push itself into her mind, like the sun chasing away a storm cloud. Redshaw remembered the sturdy cottonwood tree. She remembered putting the cradle board in a fork and tying it fast. She wept again, but this time in hope. Perhaps the flood hadn't taken her baby. Perhaps the cottonwood had been strong enough to stand in a churning current. Ignoring the pain in her ankle, she rose and staggered around in the darkness. There was only one thing to do. Find that tree. Though the sky was filled with stars, there was no moon. As her mind began to clear, she could hear coyotes barking all around her, then wolves howling far away. There were other things in the darkness that were far more dangerous than coyotes or wolves. Bears were known to maim and kill two-leggeds, likewise the great cat. All the more reason to find her baby. Redshaw heard the birds beginning to awaken, then noticed a pale glow over the horizon. Dawn was approaching. That meant she had been knocked out for most of the night, and she wondered how far the flood had carried her. Slowly, slowly the light grew, and shadows took the shapes of hills and trees. Waiting was difficult, but she knew it would be wiser to be patient until there was more light. She was glad to know which way was east. Light gave her a chance to look at her injured ankle. It was badly sprained, though she couldn't remember how. Somewhere in the hazy distance, she heard the bellow of a bull buffalo and the trilling call of a red-winged blackbird's morning song. Life started new each day, and Redshaw prayed her baby was somewhere alive. Hawks took to the sky and soared on the cool morning breezes. A river was close because the valley was full of trees and the mist from its waters hung above them, but she couldn't recognize the land. She was far from home, though like all Lakota, she was a good traveler. I was looking at her bat trail, something she had been taught as a girl. She would have recognized country she had passed through. Immediately, she looked around for the slope with the sturdy cottonwood, hoping that she had not been swept far from that, but she could see nothing familiar. As the first rays of the new sun hit her face, she stood and turned west. There were some realities in her favor. The storm had come from the west, and the cottonwood tree in which she had put her baby had been on the east-facing slope. The flood had come down from the west and had swept her downslope to the east toward the river. Behind her, the river was flowing north. She could have been swept into it somewhere to the south, to her left, and carried along by its flood-swollen current to where she had awakened. Rethinking all of this, she turned her limping steps to the south. Redshaw ignored the hunger in her stomach. A gentle morning breeze chilled her, but helped to dry out her dress. She was barefoot and bare-legged, her moccasins and leggings taken by the flood. Grabbing a broken branch, she used it as a walking stick. She kept a steady pace, knowing she couldn't walk fast with her injured ankle. At mid-morning, she stopped at a cool spring and drank its clear water. The day was warming, and it gave her renewed hope. Close to midday, she paused to rest her ankle and realized she had reached a gully that had been flooded. Great piles of broken branches and flattened grass silently told the story of yesterday's flash flood. She gasped as she recognized the sturdy cottonwood. Ignoring her throbbing ankle, she tried to run, but even as she drew near to the tree, she saw that its branches held no cradleboard. Perhaps, she tried to reason, this isn't the tree. But the torn-up gully could not be mistaken. She reached the tree and knew she had been here. She knew that she had placed her son in the right fork and tied his cradleboard to it. There was nothing here. Rachel fell to the ground and wept. If only she had stayed home. If only she had not gotten angry over her husband's second wife. Wiping away her tears, she stood and followed the path of the flood, looking for the cradleboard with her son in it. The path of destruction was easy to follow. She had been swept along here, and she wondered how it was that she was still alive. At the river's edge, she turned and followed it north. When the sun was low in the western sky, she had returned to the spot she had awakened. She had not eaten, and had taken water only once, but she didn't care. She wanted to die. Like the day before, clouds rimmed over the western horizon. But this day they were white and billowy, not low and dark. Resting against a small oak, Rachel wept quietly. You who live in the clouds, she prayed, take pity on my son. He is so small and helpless. Take his spirit up to grandfather. And if you would be so kind, I want to be with my son. Rachel cried herself to sleep. She awoke just after sundown to a strange feeling in her full breast, reminding her of her mind-numbing loss. The night was coming as she wept again, great sobs shaking her body. Mercifully, the weariness of her body, weak from hunger, dragged her into sleep. A frightening dream of dark swirling water woke her sometime in the night. To the west was a distant rumble of thunder and flashes of lightning. She immediately recalled her situation and fell into despair, knowing that she had failed as a mother and a wife. You who live in the clouds, she prayed once again as thunder rolled beyond the horizon, be kind to my son. Take him where it is safe. She thought that she would never be remembered as a good woman, but as a foolish and jealous one who caused the death of her own son. In her mind, she could see him, his dark eyes looking up at her with trust. It was all that she would ever have of him. The honorable thing to do was go back to the village, she thought, and tell White Wing that her foolishness had killed their son. Even if he were to forgive her, she could never forgive herself. Though he was a good man, Rachel knew it was not likely that White Wing would welcome her back. It would be more likely that she would be banished from the village and forced to wander alone for the rest of her life. Once more, the soft, round little face of her son appeared in her mind. She could hear his soft voice, too. Perhaps that's what grief did to someone, she thought, as she wept quietly. When she finally calmed herself, she heard the soft voice again. In her despair, she reached out and touched something in the darkness. Lightning flashed, and in that instant of light, she saw the cradleboard and heard her son cry out in hunger. Disbelief tormented her. She expected the image of her son to fade away in the next heartbeat, but it didn't. Instead, he cried out again. With a shout of joy, she grabbed the cradleboard and breathed on his tiny face. He was there. Rachel's joy knew no bounds. Thank you, grandfather, she cried. Thank you, you who live in the clouds. She unwrapped him from the cradleboard and fed him. He eagerly suckled her breast, filling what seemed his bottomless hunger. Then she took him into the water and they bathed together. They slept on a grassy slope, caressed by a warm breeze. In the light of a new day, they began their journey home. Sometime on the second day, White Wing appeared, and Redshawl was overjoyed yet again. From their appearance, he could tell that his wife and son had been through a difficult time. He made camp and saw to their comfort. "I have decided to take Necklace back to her grandparents," he said. "There are many good men who could take her for a wife." "No," said Redshawl. "That would bring her shame. I will welcome her into our lodge because I will always be honored to be your first wife." Then she told him about the flood and that their son had been lost and then returned by the thunders. Though she never questioned why her son had been returned, for the rest of her life, Redshawl wondered how it had happened. It was a joyful mystery and a reality that was sometimes hard to believe, one that she looked upon as a gift. To show gratitude for such a gift, she knew she had to give of herself in return. So Redshawl took her rightful place as White Wing's first wife and welcomed Necklace as she would a sister. In time, they became close, and both were known far and wide as selfless and devoted mothers. Redshawl's son grew tall and strong and was devoted to his mother. When he was 15, White Wing bestowed on the boy the name his mother had given him. For the rest of his life, he was known as Wakinya Agalipi, brought back by the thunders. Redshawl lived a long life and was regarded by many as a good, wise woman. When someone would praise her for her wisdom, she would thank them and quietly tell a story of how her son came by his name and how even foolishness can lead to wisdom. Those who knew her would listen in the spring and summer, especially when the thunders rumbled and lightning flashed inside the great rolling clouds. They would listen as she stood outside her lodge, singing an honor song for those who lived in the clouds.